Welcome back to NALP's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professionals Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Today, we have a special episode where it's going to be a host episode with Brett and you chatting about some things that are on our minds and our businesses dealing with new employees. So it's good to see you again, Brett. How are you?
I am well, Skyler. This is, you know, the pressure is off of having to come up with really serious questions for our guests and really, you know, really digging deep. We know each other well enough. We could just, this is casual. We could put our feet up for this conversation. Well, but I think we're actually trying to dig in. We've been talking about what's been on our minds in the current state. And we found a matching conversation about people. Surprisingly, it's always about people and the development of and the curiosities of when and how. And I think we pose the question to ourselves of, you know, as we grow teams, what is a realistic expectation of when somebody really matches to the, fills the gap that has been created? They are created for lots of different reasons, but is there ever a moment when can we reach to say, this person has achieved what I needed them to do in this role? New account managers, production managers, you know, field supervisor, whatever that role is, but how do we get there? Because usually you go through that emotional swing. You're excited about hiring, then you get engaged and they're biting in, but then there's always this little moments of like, they're not there yet. When are they going to be there? And then, you know, at the end, you know, how many are very successful and can you grow? But how many leave because they didn't get what they needed from, we didn't get a mutual relation, understanding of each other, and it just didn't work out. And back again, here we are with the hole and to fill. So, you know, I think we could solve this in the next hour. And it, clearly, no. I mean, it's a lifetime of education there. But let's open the conversation and I think provide some thoughtful context to maybe our listeners that are going through the same sort of thoughts.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think it's a challenge that all of us have, no matter the size of the company or the type of company. You know, when we're working with people, our most important asset, you know, those are the challenges that we have. And I use that term challenge in a positive way, growing people, developing people, helping people to become their best and contribute, you know, their very best, not just contribute to our organization's their best, though we do want that. But in order to do that, they have to be living their best life too, and be a good fit for what they're doing. So I think there's a question on one, how do we measure and quantify whether they have achieved what we're asking them to achieve, you know, more practically in their role? Another question that we've been having here at Landcare is how fast should that happen? What is a reasonable time frame for them to get from point A to point B, you know, to achieve that that benchmark or whatever it might be. So as you said, you know, we have questions, and these are some things that I think a lot of people are trying to quantify, to work out, to evaluate, to assess whether that's happening, both whether it's happening and how quickly it's happening. So
it stands like at that beginning part is, you know, we all want, you know, the magic wand that says the person that I would love to fill this is experienced and can jump right in and had a similar role within the same type of organization, and man, they could just go right into this space. And the reality is it's usually none of that, or it's some of that. And so how much effort or how much reliance do you all, or should we put on to experience versus the will or the want kind of piece?
Yeah, that's a good point. So we in our discussions, there's some point where there's a amount of skill or experience needed in work life, I would say. And I say that because I would have said a few years ago, like landscaping experience or expertise or education, that's really valuable. But we have found that we are, you know, with the labor challenges that we face, and not only our industry, but any labor heavy industry, restaurants, stores, retailers, whatever it might be, that we are needing to look outside in our recruiting efforts, look outside of just landscape horticulture programs and professions. So that's why I quantify that a little bit to say, oh, there, you know, there's a certain level of like work ethic that's needed and experience, you know, working with people. But, you know, on the other hand, we talk a lot about these, I don't know, maybe softer skills that we're looking for in people, the hunger, you know, ethics, honesty, drive, passion, curiosity, those type of things. And so we're trying to refine some of our like recruiting efforts to look, and even interview questions to look for those aspects in people. And I don't know if we want to get into this now, but you brought up a good point, Brett, a few minutes ago about like, you know, what happens if we thought we found a great person and then they depart from the organization for whatever reason. And there's a multitude of reasons why that happens, why it needs to happen sometimes. But then I think sometimes we carry some of the responsibility for maybe having somebody that was maybe hungry and we didn't feed them in the right way or enough, and they moved on to a different organization. So yeah, no good answers here, but questions and challenges that we are kind of bantering around and, you know, looking for that hunger, those soft skills, and then feeding them what they need to grow.
Yeah. I'll add that we were looking at the, you know, I like the whole, attractions in the EOS world of get it, want it, capacity for it. And so I've been lining my framing around that space more, and it certainly helps when they have awareness of it, but there still is our own organizations in our scenario, the RM way. And so I've had the experience, you know, if someone says I've certainly managed crews and maintained properties, it's like, well, have you done it our way, or have you been around a zero turn? And yeah, you know how people work. And so, but then there's levels within all many different organizations and ways. And so it's like, you're right. I think it's almost more helpful if they come with to a certain degree of understanding and awareness, but let us finish that off. Let us just sort of refine what that looks like, because we're going to be very specific how you could be successful at our organization with this. And then, if you don't work out here, you may go someplace else and you may find that all the things you learn from us may not help you in their next one. Experience and again, it goes to that person's the get it, want a capacity for it. They'll figure out how to evolve and take that information. And so today we, you know, just fresh out of a production manager meeting relating to our snow operations, we have a new production manager sitting there. I have experienced production manager sitting there, and they're all looking at it like, okay, this is new information or some new. And so it's, you know, experience plays in so well, but the person has got a great background and we think, but not in our industry, but is showing a strong capacity for what's going to be in front of them. But it is, they could point out, talk to my operations team. I was like, well, what's the plan for this person? And he, they're like, well, we're not sure what degree of portfolio we want to give him yet. My camp, well, he's jumped in at this level, you know, my brain says he's making X amount in a compensation standpoint. He's got this title, give him the work. Let's go. Let's get this thing moving. Wouldn't that make sense? And I don't know if they're thinking that way or they want this to be sustainable.
Yeah, you brought up some great points. I love that phrase. I don't think I've ever heard it put quite like that. Get it, want it, capacity for it. And just your discussion there about the way that we do things and, you know, whatever the organization is, whatever the business is. And I think that's a powerful point to make. I was recently got a call from a past student of mine that grew up, his dad started a landscape company, and now him and his brother are kind of at the stage where they're taking it over. Dad's about ready to retire, and they've got some culture challenges with a handful of some older, very experienced production foreman type people that are having a hard time nurturing and mentoring the younger the younger generation, and it's kind of driving the younger generation out. And, you know, I talked with him about the importance of culture, and this is where I think you're talking about, you know, not being afraid to, when we bring in new people, to help them know how we do things here. This is the way that, yeah, you might have been working for a competitor, another company, and that's great. And we appreciate that experience, but we want you to do it the way that we do it. And we have some great reasons why we do things the way that we do. So the conversation with him was about like, what is the culture? Let's really define what it is. And we've had some great guests on our podcast past few weeks that have talked about that, making career changes because of culture, or really working on the culture. You know, we talked about Row the Boat recently. So I guess my point, Brett, is for our listeners, you know, establishing that culture and really owning it, and then helping people buy into that culture, and really just standing up for it and not being afraid to really push it and help people get it and do it the way that we want to do it and understand why that is.
And then it requires a consistency of execution of that, regardless of the role and function that, you know, a person goes through this. And I learned that a little bit through Landcare, and I've heard of other organizations that everybody goes through the same orientation, regardless of skill sets, regardless of function and role. They have to learn the fundamentals of the business. They have to learn, you know, maybe cross train other roles and just see the depth of it. And so, you know, again, not getting, and I guess I'll link to a trap that we've found ourselves often is the move too fast. And so we've put people in the field. We say, oh, you've been around a mower. Okay. Well, tomorrow or today we've hired you. I need you to go mow, or I need you to go perform this service. And it just doesn't work. And so discipline's required to say, how do we keep to a pattern of we've hired you, but you need to be oriented. You need to be prepared. We need to make you very successful. We may not get any production. We may not get any return on this time immediate, but it will drive in the future. It is not an area that we've been very strong in. It's admittedly saying that we've been fast to hire, fast to put into space, into seats, at every level of this organization, and have watched us not be able to sustain, you know, some of those pieces there. So it's that constant adjusting of the dials, but knowing that we have a good consistent plan going forward will help us stay more successful in that space.
Yeah, well, I wish you wouldn't have said you haven't been successful in that, because I was just about ready to ask you some questions so you could help the rest of us solve some of those problems, because some of those challenges, because you brought up, you know, a couple of things that have to do with the speed and the cadence and timing of whether it be orientation, onboarding, or ramping up to their full capacity, whether that be a new crew member that's going to be mowing on a 60-inch mower, or it's a new manager, a new camp manager taking on a book of work, or a new production manager that's just coming into snow season and also new with the company. I mean, that's where we, and I know you and I aren't the only ones that are, you know, dealing with those challenges. How fast do you do it? A few minutes ago, you brought up another aspect to that, with this, new production manager that you talked about, asking like, how quick do we give, this individual a book of work? And you're kind of thinking, oh, let's give them. And we were just having this conversation, this morning in a meeting here at Landcare with that idea, like how much work do we give new account managers? How quickly do we do that? And we had some discussions about some account managers that, because of necessity in a location, were given more responsibility and a bigger book of work early on, and were able to be successful at that. We get other markets where it's like, well, we want to kind of hold back a little bit, make sure we're not moving too fast, because that's a problem too. So what's the balance, you know? Where do you, you know, push them, give them a little bit more than maybe they're ready for, but let them stretch and grow in that way, or, you know, and but not move too fast, but then you risk, what if you move too slow and then those hungry people get bored and they don't feel like their skills are being used and they kind of start wandering off to other other arenas. You any thoughts on how to quantify that, to solve that?
Well, you know, and to your point about the branch models, it's awareness of what our needs are. And so if we were an organization, or when an organization is growing exponentially, they have probably very little choice but to find somebody that could immediately step into a role, because they're going to have to do it again and again and again, versus the ability to grow. And so that may change recruiting strategies. That may change how you the connections you have within the person that's going to be the right fit, versus, if it's growing really fast and you need to throw the work into this role, new hires, with less experience, that just need a lot of coaching, you're probably going to be frustrated pretty quickly. And so it's, I think it's a bit of an awareness of where your organization is at the time. What could be the solution? It may not be the forever solution, but it could be what's right now. But that levels off. And if you can, if I think about it, our biggest piece is, regardless of where we want to be, as our company's matured, we've got to take control of that situation. And so let's start pipelining managers or these roles, and saying that our future production manager is going to come within the field. We're going to have two or three folks in our organization that are really poised and ready for that. And so it's a transition of time. And they shouldn't be afraid to take on crews in an immediate level. The volume of crews will be different in that capacity. We've went through this past year looking at one branch ability for production managers to manage there. And they're both managing maybe 5 to 6 crews each in this one branch. And some of those times has been a struggle. And so you quickly think, should we hire another branch manager? There was going to be some growth out of this branch, certainly. But should we just lessen that up, give them less are they asking for that? Well, man, can I just have, if I only had 3 crews, I would kill it. I'd be this. Mm-hmm. But then it's this, in my mind, and certainly a lot of people's conversations, what was that growth? Is that, what's that cost look to as an organization? But is it what these folks need, if they're the right folks leading this production? Is it what they need to help grow and develop? And so I would tell you, it does not feel great coming back and saying, okay, now, we gave you this, we got to take some away and you got to restart. So it's like, should we have really only given them 3 at the beginning for year 1, 4 to 5 year 2, and then maybe watch as it grows from that point? And so these are those hindsight moments of it. But it is, it is important to really frame where you are with that, and then build with the right group.
Yeah, I hear you, saying part of that is like knowing that where you're at as an organization and the people involved. And that's the piece that I think kind of stuck out to me too, is like, and I don't know if you necessarily said this, but this is what I was kind of hearing and thinking, is the importance of knowing the individuals involved, because I feel like processes are powerful, and they're a good thing to have in place in organizations, is processes, standard operating processes that people know, this is the way we do things, this is how we get the quality and the service that we're trying to achieve. And I think all great organizations, especially in the service side of things, have good processes that they use, whether that be the process that, I don't know, Chick-fil-A uses in their drive-through, or right. Whether yep. that be, checking into a Marriott hotel, there's processes behind that. So I think that's good, but there's a balance between having the process, but also having the flexibility to know that we're working with individuals, with individual people that have unique skills, aspirations, talents, hopes. And so I think a part of that is knowing the individual, knowing the people. And as a leader, truly to be able to lead well, I would think a piece to that puzzle is knowing knowing the individuals involved and what the needs are of them. And that can be the new or hire, but it also can be, well, who do we pair them with that's also a good coach and mentor?
Yeah. And these are the folks that we, you know, did the hiring for, and we believe in them. So all those nice characteristics that you shared is like, yeah, we believe that you have these things. So apply that with the right, you know, company shirt on, and do that with the values of the organization, mm-hmm. you know, apply your unique spin on those values. But get it done. And, but there is a, you know, I would think if I was down in that organization, it's, you know, if it's about people, you know, if they're good matches, then, you know, great, grow with them. If they're not good matches and you need to make a change, you know, that's your responsibility to grow a team that you can build and create. And so if it's clients, you know, the same thing, it might be a little more difficult to let a client go, and because you don't get along with them in that kind of scenario, but it is a dynamic to build a portfolio that that you could be successful with. So we're not meant to have all of account managers or production managers or field supervisors all look the same and act the same. That's not going to happen for us. They're all going to come in where we could call out some of our best team members in our organization. But those are circumstances that made that person successful or someone that is just enjoy to work with. And so recreating that is really, really difficult. So comparing it's a consistency of measure, I think is what we're getting to. Say, you've got the values we believe you should have. Now let's make sure that you have the understanding of what that measure is, and you can produce that how you want to produce that, what you can. There's a very much more wide array of guardrails on that piece.
Yeah. So that's a good point. And brings up another question I want to throw out there is, you know, the consistency of measure and kind of where our conversation started, and how do we know when an employee is accomplishing or achieving what we hope, you know, or we need them to do. And I think a part of that, maybe a big part of that, is having well thought out written job responsibilities. So the question is, you know, where have you seen that be successful? What are maybe some takeaways or best practices that we might talk about when we're writing, you know, job descriptions, so that people know what it is that is expected of them and each other?
Yeah, I found that, you know, through our HR, when you HR perspective, a job description is essential from attracting the right people. And so be very clear on what that is, and not distracting or, you know, not trying to pitch, but just to be very, you know, clear and consistent with that is. Then for us, we've started evolving it to a framework. So once hired, here's the framework of the role. And that gets a little bit softer. It gets a little bit more wide range. It has metrics within it. And we have the mantra of team client assets. And so in those pieces there, we do set metrics, but we also set sort of an understanding of what it means to retain people or retain clients. And that allows us to explain or share stories more than what we experience is that job description. And so that framing of the job allows the character of that person to come in and say, I can understand how to get that there. Of course, you need to conduct X amount of trainings every month or year. But in that, you know, be the person that you are and deliver the results of that. So it's I like the framing statement more than the description. It allows us, I think, to dig in deeper. And then it is, you know, we don't do it, but I love the idea of mentoring. And how do we really establish lots and lots of conversations about mentoring, you know, from at a peer to peer level, mm-hmm. and that value could really keep people on the right track.
Yeah. Like you use the term, you know, the narrative, I believe, in looking at those job descriptions, I think you can make some really boring, overwhelming written job descriptions, mm-hmm. right? That aren't very exciting to want to be a part of. So I think you got to be careful with that. And you kind of shared a way to do that. What we have been, we've been also working on that this year. What we have been doing is a little different, but similar in some ways, is not in the job and I don't think we're calling it even job descriptions, but job responsibilities, not trying to delineate every single task that a person can do, but creating the big things, the big three, the big five, you know, here's the big things that we expect you to do. For example, for our production managers, it's quality, safety, and efficiency, right? So your job is to make sure we have really good quality, as much as possible. We're efficient with our time and resources, and we're safe doing that. And then there's a lot of things that could be like, you could bore people to death in a written job description, but if we can get them to know, like, here is your primary responsibility that we want you to be really successful at. And then we kind of create some graphics and kind of show that in a way that's, you know, nice to look at, you know, visually and to see. And we feel like, and I think you'd probably agree, like those, we'll just say job descriptions for lack of a better term. I'm not sure that's the best term, but it not only helps the individual know where we're trying to get them to go, but helps other people know, like an account manager or a general manager or a payroll people know what each other's and how responsibilities are and how those relate together. And I think that can be a tool in this idea that we've been talking about, is onboarding, ramping people up, getting them to where we want them to be, helping them know where we would like them to be and why that's meaningful to them too in their careers.
Yeah, it moves on to that empowerment space. You know, that description and frameworks and all the manuals that we can give somebody, they need to then take that and is that mission and intent, you know, the values, all of those, frame that box. And while some of us, you know, that visual says we'll go straight lines, some might go squiggly lines, it's like they all got to where we wanted to be at some, you know, some way or another. If they go outside the box, they went outside our values, they went outside that mission or intent, then those are corrective pieces to go in through. But if we can provide that space for that empowerment, then, you know, it was a visual that, you know, it's like the airport bathrooms. Was this bathroom a green, yellow, red, or a frown face, flat face, or smiley face?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, we're asking our folks, is like team, client, and assets, make them smiley faces. And if you can make them smile, how you do that, if it's bring them a snack as a client because they love you for that engagement, or it's you're just answering the questions they need to, it's within the, we're empowering you to do that space, but you've made them smile. And we'll measure that smile through retention and enhancement contracts and all those pieces. And if you could get the team to smile and our assets to smile, then we know that you're winning in that measure. And it's just simply that when it comes down to, you know, a level of compensation and a level of growth and capacity, then we want to use the metrics a little harder rather than just, you know, a smiley face. Cause there's certainly my clients love me. I get that they love you, but you you're not pressuring them. You're not applying the right kind of enhancement sales. You know, pressure is not the word, but you know, it's just, you've got to really pull all these things together and capture the full picture. But, so it's certainly, it can be as, and I think the world and the internet is just full of ways to measure and help sort of track those pieces, but it can be as simple as you want it to be. And it could be as complex as you need it to be to deliver the results. It's just the consistency and as the simpler you make it, the faster that person is going to be aligned. And if you made a good hire, I don't doubt that this probably moves really quickly. If you made an okay hire, and then you really better dial in how to train that person to make that okay hire a good hire. If you make a bad hire, then you're going to find that out really dang quick, that even all the good things they have, they're just not the right fit.
Yeah. You're always, I love listening to you kind of share your thoughts, cause it brings up more questions. So I'm just going to ask some more questions, cause something I was thinking about just listening to you there was, you know, measuring the smiley face, right? The feedback loop, that's really important for us. Obviously with clients, it's important to know, and you said, you know, we can be as detailed as we need to be. I think that's a good way to word it. What is it we really are trying to get? But so, you know, through client surveys, we do them once a year. And we actually intentionally do them during the hardest time of the year when things are like, you know, really going crazy.
When is that for you?
So that's like, in like late summer.
Yeah.
So client surveys, trying to measure that smiley face, get a feel for what is it. We only ask them a few questions, but they're very intentional what we ask them and how we ask them. But another piece to that, I think, is employee satisfaction surveys. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's something you guys do, but what do you think the value is, or what do you feel like the value is, as we're talking about employees and growing employees, is, of surveying, whether that be formally or informally? I think there's different ways to do it, but getting the pulse on how are employees feeling about their experience with our organization. And, you know, it's a fine line, because you need there to be a level of
anonymity.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for that.
I
was going to say animosity, but that's not it.
So. No, another conversation. No,
yeah. So, you know, they need to feel like it's to a certain mm-hmm. degree, they're anonymous, so that they can be candid. But then to be candid in a healthy way. I'm thinking back to every semester, my students would fill out their end of course evaluations. And half of that was on the course material and curriculum, and half of that was on me as their teacher. Yeah. And so sometimes those were hard to take, you know. But so anyway, I'm just wondering, you know, some thoughts on, and maybe our audience is kind of thinking about, well, you know, has my employer asked me how things are going? Or if you're a leader, am I asking my employees what their experience is? And am I doing it in a way that I get some genuine responses, where I get to hear what I need to hear and versus what kind of I want to hear from employees?
Yeah, we're going into our third year of an annual survey to our team, and we've been working hard to make sure we're asking the question. And so, you know, what we apply is, it, you know, it feels good. It checks a box. We did training. We did this event. You know, we're put the values on the wall, all those things. And so our annual survey is called a culture survey, or we call it that, or focus it on that, is like, do we clearly articulate? Could you clearly tell us our values? And we pulse that, you know, a version of a net promoter score. Would you know, recommend us and that at a staff level and all these things. And so we're getting a lot of feedback, good, pretty reasonable statistical participation. We do get the outliers that says pay us, you know, $1 million, and we get the, we get the low liers. And so, you know, we set them to a different side. Said, let's not ignore them, but let's not call that the voice. And so then we look at that middle space and say, what's the voice here? And we always will share back what the top three are. And 1 year pay was in number one seat, but the last couple of years it's been in either two seat or three seat. It doesn't seem to ever come out in that what our results are. Accountability came up and additional trainings. Like, there was just really refreshing to see what they wanted from us, versus what we thought. And so certainly it was a direction that we might not have gone down, or we would have kept thinking, oh, everybody just wants to get paid more. What else does it matter? If we just paid them more, they'll be happier. It's like, no, this is telling us a whole different story. And then we've gone down to the simple smiley faces, and I had a coach that helped facilitate this conversation, but we had some tough conversations with some managers and we also wanted to help clarify some roles. And we had on the wall the three faces. And we said at the end of the meeting, where are you with clarity? The me part of this, like, you want this, you know, capacity, get it, want a capacity for it. And they, you know, they'd be like, I'm a frowny face here, but I'm pretty flat there, but I'm good here. Right. And so it was just interesting to ask at the end, just point to what face you are right now. And
okay, cool.
And so we've tried it all, and we will hit people with surveys after events, just through like Team Engine or a text, and say, how was that event? Reply back, and again, get a couple little comments or something, but not a lot of participation. But we're trying not to kill them with it. That's a curious, like, what's the threshold of the amount of questions you could ask before someone says,
yeah,
stop asking. And I almost got to imagine, or I assume something for an organization like Landcare, there's a million things you'd want to know and engage in. But you only get their attention for so long. So how do you get what you really want out of that space?
Yeah. Yeah. You can only, a survey has to be kind of sure in reality. So you got to choose your questions wisely. And then here's another thing that is important is, if you're going to solicit feedback from your employees, you got to be ready to do something with it. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually can be even more harmful to ask for feedback or survey and then do nothing with that. I think that's more harmful than if you never asked in the first place in some certain situations, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can really run the risk of discouraging employees that cared to share the feedback in a way that, you know, is helpful. So I think that's a piece of it too. Like, and kind of starting with the end in mind is like, well, what questions do we really need to ask this year or right now? And those could change over time. And then we need to be ready to like do something with that. And even if it's just like you said, Brett, oh, we share back. These were the top three things that we heard. This is what we kind of want to do about that. This is what you are saying. And this is, I don't mean to keep going back to my classroom days at university, but I felt it was helpful sometimes when you had them, like if I had a more difficult project that happened and then there's some feedback on it too, let the class know, hey, this is what the overall experience is like. This is how most people are feeling. This is what, you know what, you're not the only one struggling with this. Everybody was struggling with that. And then you brought up a good point about, and we could have a whole episode on this, on motivation for employees and money. Money is not, there's good research on this. Money is not the best motivator. It is a motivator up to a certain point. And so there's a great book out there that I'd recommend. Yeah, there's a great book out there that I'd recommend by an author named Daniel Pink, like the color pink, and it's called Drive. And Daniel Pink talks about three things that employees that motivates people, and money again is like a foundation to the pyramid. We need to have enough that it's competitive. We feel like we're getting paid competitively with other people in our market. After that point, it stops being a great motivator. What are great motivators, according to Dan Pink, are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And he says people want to have enough autonomy that they can use their skills. They don't want to be micromanaged, for example. They want to have some autonomy. They want to be able to have some time to explore and do things, you know, the way that they feel like they should be done. And again, we talked a few minutes ago about doing it our way, right? So what are the road, you know, the barriers that they can work within? So they like to have autonomy. They like to be able to work towards mastering their skill. Most people don't want to be just mediocre at what they do. They want to be a master at it. And then they want to do something for a purpose. They want to have a higher purpose. So just some thoughts there and maybe a book recommendation to our audience when we're talking about motivation, money, soliciting feedback on employees' experience, being ready to do something with that feedback, and then kind of understanding what motivates or drives people. Daniel Pink did a ton of research to come up with kind of these ideas, the way he packages them in the book. So it's really great read that I use when I'm thinking about training and developing people in our organization.
Well, and so I love the conversation. We're on a different path when we started. So like the idea of we take new people, how do we get them ready?
Yeah.
I think and this is the fun that our listeners get, you know, you just have to listen to us. You have no choice to what we discuss, but I'll try to tie the two together. It's a knowing, the more confident you know in what the roles and what you're asking of your people and what you're giving in return, then the future leaders in your organization that are coming are going to be way more successful. And so you're not going to make assumptions. You're going to be clear on what your organization's, how it lives and breathes. And so you'll find people that match up very well. And then it doesn't matter if it's $1 million or $2 million, a book of business, they're going to be successful and they're going to grow. And we want them to be asking the questions of how can you give me more? And they're only going to do that by, to your point, they feel like they have a sense of purpose. They have a reasonable amount of autonomy. Then they'll be like, I'm ready. Let's just don't get in my way. But if we constrain all that space, then they're just going to stand there and wait till you tell them what to do. And that will always be a grinding moment because you're always be expecting, well, why aren't they acting like me in this role? I would be doing this and this or that. Why wouldn't they be asking for more work? And we've not provided them the space to go for that.
Yeah. Great way to tie that all together.
And
that's a hard question just posed is like, here's a question. We'll just throw this grenade out. There's like, if employees, and I know this is an oversimplification, but if employees aren't, you know, their actions aren't what we hope they would be, is that our fault? Did we stifle that a little bit? And I don't think there's a great answer to that. And I know that each situation individual is unique. I mean, some people are just not driven to do the type of things we do, but you know, sometimes we have to like say, what are we doing to stoke the fire of passion and hunger or throw cold water on it?
It is a relationship that like any other relationship. And so you are at least 50%. Involved in that, you know, so you have to admit or be self-aware that somewhere that there you have a percentage of cause or responsibility to, and it doesn't mean that if they're not family or a spouse, it matters more so that you have a responsibility in this relationship. And it could be very, you know, obviously it's a working relationship, but it is just say, if you ever thought like, nope, that's not anything to do with me, then I would say, how? Like that person was a bad person. Well, you hired that person. So you now assume the responsibility of why that person's behaviors was allowed in the organization. Even if you didn't see it, they got you. So it is impossible, yeah. I think, to say that there is no reason I was not responsible for things. Now, it doesn't mean you got to beat yourself up or go down, you know, that path with it. It's just to be aware that you can change things and not be caught, you know, flat-footed the next time this comes around.
Yeah. Good thoughts. Well, I guess our invitation would be, since we pose more questions than we have answers to today, but I think the invitation would be to our audience, you know, think about defining, you know, those roles, what they are, hiring the right type of people, and what that means to you, giving them opportunity to have autonomy, mastery, and purpose, asking feedback and being ready to do something with that feedback, get a pulse on how your employees are doing, and really trying to be intentional about helping people grow and develop.
And look at that role. I mean, if the next hire you're making is an account manager, ask the team about what did we do well for their orientation? What did we do well when they came on board? And so there's a lot of, you know, that feedback piece is very, very valuable. And again, it just ties everybody into, so then of course, when you see another account manager, you're excited for that person. You don't feel threatened and like, why is someone else here? Or that kind of piece. And so all, you know, you can't control how people think. And certainly I've learned that they're all over the place with thoughts.
Yeah.
So you can predict it, but you can't force that piece. So, we've made no qualms about it. We do not solve anything on this podcast. We only provide big thinking and clarity to say, you know, try something at your organization. Don't be in this scenario. I think it's always a call to action. Don't stay still in any part of this, your business, because it'll die if you just stay and just stare at it.
Yeah, good point. Well, it's been a great discussion, Brett. We could keep going, but as we kind of wrap up, let's share some rose and thorns from this past week since we talked last time, and some things that have been a little rough or challenging, and some beautiful roses. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, Rose, certainly lots of family peace. I'm going to test my wife. She says she listens to this podcast, but I'm going to say, you know,
we're going to find out.
I love my wife, and she's been, you know, a rock in our family. We had an exciting weekend. And so let's see if she really listens to these things. Maybe I'll get some feedback on that one, but, but yeah, family, we're entering the holidays. So I'm excited about that. You know, the meeting we had today about snow was partly to help reduce anxiety around a very challenging part of the business. And so, let's make sure that we've got a good, strategy going into it. And so, you know, we'll work through those. And if I could take the word fear or anxiousness away from the word snow and not have those ever two go together, then I think we're growing. So, some work ahead, but always, time. And it snowed, like this is our first, we actually had an event today. So we're awesome. It's all moving. Awesome. Skyler, you're Rosenthorne.
Yeah. For me, you know, again, yeah, this past week's been a great time to just be with family and things like that. My Rosenthorne are both personal related versus work related, but the rose is we have been, my wife has been driving an old minivan. It's got about 200,000 miles on it and makes all sorts of noises that it didn't make when it was new. and so we've been saving for a while in order to get her into something newer. And so mm-hmm. we were able to finally do that this last week, is get her into something newer and more comfortable and smoother and less noisy. So that's been a rose for her. And the thorn was something I didn't expect, is my water heater to blow out at 10 o'clock at night as I was getting ready to shower. And I was trying to blame it on my daughters, who like to stay in the shower for long periods of time and use all the hot water. But when I went out in the garage to check on it, it was a bigger problem than just my daughter's long shower. So the thorn is I had to spend some money on a new water heater to replace it that was not planned for. But you know, all worked out fine. And we have some great hot water, and my wife is in a little bit better of a drive than her old
neighbor. Yeah, you've made it to the other side of that, and you're just feeling the benefits of all those things, right? And so you know, don't look at credit card statements or bills for a little while, and you'll still remember the high of
somebody else will pay the credit card bill when it comes due here next week. That'll be nice. So
that's the hope. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thanks for the discussion. It's been a good chat, and we'll wrap it up here. We thank all of our listeners for being with us. We encourage you to like and subscribe to the podcast and share with those that you work with and get involved. And we'll see everyone soon.
Take care, everyone. Thanks, Skyler.